show you don't want to miss.
The Big E Sports Show
with Elissa Walker-Campbell. Stay tuned as Elissa goes up close and personal with some of the biggest names in the world of sports. From Dallas Cowboys Hall of Fame quarterback Roger Staubach to legendary broadcaster Pat Summerall. Think big.
Think big.
It's all happening right here on the Big E Sports Show.
We are having a good time this weekend on the Big E Sports Show, and we are continuing with our college football conversation. And up next, it is time to head out west. We are going to shine the spotlight on the Pac-12 conference, much improved, and they are showing a true level of competitiveness. It's been amazing. And, you know, when you talk about college football, the league this year, they've got four newcomers in regards to head coaches. At UCLA, they got Jim Mora, Arizona, Rich Rodriguez, Arizona State, Todd Graham, and Washington State. We are so familiar with Mike Leach. And providing the helping hand this weekend is our good friend. I always love catching up with him, Steve Bordstein from the Land of Enchantment, Fox Sports Radio, New Mexico. How are you, Mr. 1340?
Fabulous, Alyssa. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, talk to me a little bit about as far as the Pac-12 conference, because they have been impressive early on. Here we are going into week three. Four new coaches. They have really come in and energized the league. Would you agree?
You talk about what's going on at UCLA. I think that's the story right now with the Pac-12 conference, is the job that Jim Mora has done. This is a program that looked absolutely beleaguered with the defection of Rick Neuheisel and just the horrendous way they ended up their season. They got blown out in the Pac-12 championship game a week after getting blown out by USC in the last game of the year for USC, 50-0. And then they get buried in the Pac-12 championship game because USC couldn't be in it. And he just figured that program was a mess. Jim Mora came in, and he was very braggadocious. He was very outspoken. And sure enough, so far, two wins against the Rice team the first week. They were overmatched. And then they come in, they come back to the Rose Bowl, and they punch Nebraska right in the mouth. And that was a statement win. That's a statement win. And when UCLA is relevant in the Pac-12 conference, it makes the entire conference better because there is that natural rivalry. And now the anticipation gets to really build that maybe there is someone who can, you know, light a fire under USC a little bit.
Well, one of the guys from UCLA that is creating quite a buzz and a lot of preseason recognition, Jonathan Franklin. I mean, some folks are even throwing his name around for the Heisman. Is that a little bit too early, Steve?
Any talk about Heisman, regardless of who it is, the name that comes up, is way too early. We're 2 weeks into the season, so I dismiss all talk of stuff like that early on. But he's been impressive, and the offense seems to gel around him. But notably, you mentioned the head coach, and it is Jim Mora. There's a fire there. There's an anticipation. I watched that game against Nebraska the other day. They're excited about football. When I watched them the last couple of years under Rick Neuheisel, Alyssa, it was almost as if it was a chore for these guys to go out there and play football. And, you know, winning changes everything, and an attitude changes everything. And that's what I'm seeing right now from UCLA, is it's a different attitude. They're fun. They're getting out there. They're making plays. They're tackling. And it's a rejuvenated UCLA. And as much as I hate to say it, it's a better UCLA.
And a very significant win against a very good Big Ten conference opponent in Nebraska to win by 6 points. I mean, you're taking care of business at home. Jason Peters is going to be on my show in our next segment, so I'm sure I'm going to get an earful from him. But that is a great way to segue into the game this weekend as far as against Houston.
Not only that, but you mentioned the fact that it's a Big Ten school, and what a horrendous weekend it was for the Big Ten Conference. Losses by Purdue, losses by, I mean, other schools in the Big Ten Conference that just got hammered.
Right.
Wisconsin got hammered. I mean, it was not a good weekend for the Big Ten Conference. And you look at you talked earlier about the rejuvenated Pac-12. Isn't it interesting that we sort of changed personalities? The Pac-12 was the conference that got maligned for not being very good. Suddenly now, you look at the Big Ten Conference. Michigan State's okay, they're a good team, but they're not great. And Ohio State may be very good, but they can't do anything about it because they're on probation this year. And really, the Big Ten Conference has sort of now become this year's Pac-12. They were the ones that are maligned, they're not very good, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The Big Ten is still going to work out their issues, but the Big Ten Conference is having some identity crisis right now.
Steve Bordstein is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show from Fox Sports New Mexico. Does a great job on First Sports in the Morning, 1340 a.m. And, of course, we do like to pause. We like to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. And, you know, I started out our interview just talking about how much the Pac-12 has energized with these new coaches that are on board. But also, you really got to tip your hat to Mike Riley at Oregon State. I mean, they took care of business against a Big Ten opponent in Wisconsin with that 10-7 win.
That's a huge win again.
That made quite an impression.
And yeah, they're making an impression, and that's going to be a fun conference because, again, everyone talks about the Pac-12 North right now, and without Andrew Luck at Stanford, was Oregon just going to run the table up in the Pac-12 North? Well, maybe not now. Maybe Oregon State is better. You know, maybe they're starting to step things up now. You mentioned Washington State and their new head coach, Mike Leach. No, they're not there yet, but that's a work in progress, and you're going to see that. You're seeing it in Arizona with Rich Rodriguez, and they're going to be a factor. So the Pac-12 is starting to redefine themselves. And, you know, with the Pac-12 network now, there's a lot more emphasis on, you know, getting the nation out there involved with the Pac-12. I think it's a fun time right now. And USC is right now the head of the pack. I don't know how good USC is right now. I know they're number two in the country. Offensively, there's no question. They are loaded. They got Matt Barkley, Marquise Lee, Robert Woods. They bring in the kid from Penn State, Silas Redd, at running back. But I still don't know about their defense right now. I think they're a work in progress. I think if they continue this pattern, they'll be there or thereabouts when the first BCS polls come out. As we start getting into November and early December, I expect they'll be there. But they've got some big hills to climb these next couple of months.
And certainly a formidable challenge on the road this weekend at Stanford and USC. They've got some unfinished business because last year's game against them, it certainly was epic. I mean, you guys lost 56-48, but you guys got to take care of business if you can early on.
This is a different Stanford team now. There is no Andrew Luck, so this is more of a ground-and-pound controlled offense of Stanford. This is not the high-octane offense that we saw last year, like you mentioned, of that 56-48 epic defeat at home last year. So the challenge will be going up to Palo Alto. The challenge will be handling that crowd up there because that's obviously a rabid crowd they have up there. But I think USC, with their high-octane offense, if they can take care of business in their first few possessions, put some pressure on Stanford, make them have to go into a shootout mode. That's not the kind of game that this particular Stanford wants to play. If they can get out there early, put 18, 21 points on the board early on. The question for USC right now is going to be the health of their kicking game. Andre Hidari, who was injured in the opening game of the season against Hawaii, he's going to miss probably 3 to 4 more weeks. So that means no field goals. That's going to mean you have to really rely on a redshirt freshman now to get the job done in the kicking game. So, you know, it's okay when you're outscoring opponents by 20 or 30 points. But when you have to start playing against Oregon's and Cal's and Stanford's and UCLA's, and you may need a field goal, that's going to be a little dicey. So it's going to be interesting to see how that story plays itself out with Andre Hidari right now on the DL.
Well, that's huge because that injury clearly affects Coach Lane Kiffin's decision-making on the fourth down in opponent's territory. So talk to me a little bit about is there a rivalry between Stanford and USC? I had mentioned in the open, you're USC, a proud alum. I mean, kind of give us the pulse on that.
It's not as big as, like Cal or UCLA or Notre Dame, but it's there. There's definitely an anger, especially because Stanford's, they have the reputation of, shall we say, using their smarts against USC. USC gets sort of a bad reputation of not being, let's say, the brightest bulbs in the box. Let's be nice about it, at least.
Easy.
Of your show, absolutely. But that's the reputation. That's a reputation that Stanford likes to play up with, as does Cal. And that's fine. You know, Stanford's coming off a couple of sensational years. And the rival, anytime, like I mentioned with UCLA, anytime your team is relevant, you're going to be a rival to USC because you're constantly compared to USC. I mean, even when USC was on the sanctions, you know, everyone wanted to beat USC because it's still the University of Southern California. Some people refer to them as the University of Spoiled Children. So it's one of those things where that's always going to be a natural rivalry.
Steve Bortstein is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Quickly, we are getting ready to wrap it up, but tell all of our listeners where they can go and find out your stuff online.
We are at FoxSports1340.com, and my show, First Sports with Steve Bortstein, airs weekdays from 7 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time. That's 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central Time, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, excuse me. I do the show there. We're on iHeartRadio.com. Just type in Fox Sports 1340 online. You can find our show live on the Internet every day. I also do a horse racing show on weekends called The Fast Track. That's on from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Central Time. Also on FoxSports1340.com. So I'm sort of on the clock every day of the week.
You're always working so hard. So the big news this week, of course, was Notre Dame making the move to the ACC. Can you weigh in on that?
I'm not surprised that they would choose the ACC, because the ACC, from a football perspective, even though they're not officially a member of the ACC, they're going to play five ACC football schools a year. The ACC is a not very popular football conference, with the exception of Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, and Clemson. You really can't name a lot of other very popular ACC football programs. They are very good in basketball, obviously. They qualify, almost two-thirds of that conference gets into the NCAA tournament. So I understand from that perspective that Notre Dame obviously enhances their reputation by joining the ACC and getting away from the shreds of what's left of the Big East Conference right now. I'm a bit offended at the idea that Notre Dame, again, gets to sort of pick and choose what conference they want to be in, how they want to be a part of the conference, and, you know, they're still independent status, blah, blah, blah. Join a conference, you know, join up with, you know, pick a side, you know. There's a reason they didn't want to be in the Big Ten Conference, because Jim Delaney, the commissioner of the Big Ten Conference, obviously was not going to accept the terms by which the ACC accepted Notre Dame, nor should any other conference accept that. The fact that the ACC did accept that shows how desperate I think the ACC is to be relevant in the college football national scope.
Why not the Big Ten? It just seems geographically that would have made better sense.
Perfect sense. They're located right in the heart of Big Ten country. You got Purdue right next door. You got Indiana. You got all the Big Ten schools. But Jim Delaney would not allow Notre Dame to come in there and still maintain their independent status in college football. You're either going to be a part of a conference or you're not a part of a conference. And the shame of it is that the ACC is willing to accept whatever, you know, Notre Dame is going to be willing to hand out. And that's a shame, considering in my mind, I don't still to this day understand how Notre Dame has the relevancy they have. They have not been a national champion in 24 years. They have had one 10-win season in the last decade, but yet they still get to dictate how they do business in the college sports world. And to me, that's just unfathomable.
Okay, as we get ready to wrap it up, Steve, what are your thoughts on some of the other games that will be going on this weekend? You got number 1 Alabama at Arkansas, number 18 Florida at Tennessee. I'm trying to think of some other ones that, you know, I could rattle off. You know, Texas at Ole Miss. I mean, what is a particular game that you're keeping your eyes on?
I'm going to watch the Alabama-Arkansas game. Arkansas, obviously, now with the loss, their national championship expectations are blown out the window now. But I'll be curious to see how John L. Smith, you know, keeps them focused. Obviously, they still got the SEC championship still in play right now if they continue to just win out. But that's a very, very good Alabama team. They are a better Alabama team than they were last year. So I'll be very curious to see how that plays out. Also, the other game I'm curious about, mainly just from a sickness standpoint, I don't know. I want to see Penn State finally get a win. I really do. I feel this intrinsic need to see Penn State get a win. I felt so bad for that kid, the kicker, who missed 4 field goals, including the potential game winner against Virginia last weekend. And I know the Penn State story is horrendous, and I know everything involving that story is horrible. But these kids didn't do this. These kids are not responsible. This coaching staff is not responsible. And I want to see this program relevant again. Because, I brought this up when I mentioned UCLA. When Penn State's relevant in college football, all is right in college football. And I know it's never going to take, we're never going to be able to forget the horrendous things that occurred at Penn State these last 15 years. Nothing's ever going to replace that. Penn State needs a win, though, to keep themselves relevant. And I'm afraid if this season goes as bad as it's going right now, Penn State in 5 years is going to be a ghost town of college football. And nobody, I don't think, wants to see that.
So, Steve, are you disclosing that you actually have a soft spot in your heart?
I make no claim of that whatsoever, and that is not something I will ever, ever, ever reveal to anybody.
Oh, hey, the great Steve Bortstein has been with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show, and as I said, you're a proud USC alum. We got the NBA season just around the corner, and we are so excited to have O.J. Mayo right here in our backyard with the Dallas Mavericks. Give some love for this guy that's entering into his fourth year as a pro.
I was excited when he came over to USC, but he didn't stick around that long. And there's reasons for that. We're not going to get into that, but he did spend 4 years with the Memphis Grizzlies, averaged 15.2 points a game. He's set to join a radically revamped roster in Dallas right now. Dirk Nowitzki, Chris Kaman, Elton Brand, It's a younger team now, and I like what I'm seeing from Dallas as far as the moves they made this offseason. I think it's going to be a fun Western Conference. Dallas is right in the mix right now, and O.J. Mayo is going to fit in well. He came off the bench for the Grizzlies each of the last two seasons. I think he's going to be a factor for Dallas, and I think if he continues to show that he's willing to be part of that team, then I think all things are positive for O.J. Mayo.
Well, O.J. Mayo certainly made quite an impression on me when he came into the media press conference and was introduced earlier this week. Just a very sharp young man, as Coach had said, you know, he is a proven player in this league, and they're looking for some significant contributions. As you had just said, this completely revitalized roster, and there's some new additions that we're going to keep our eye on. It's going to be exciting to cover.
He's going to be one of the early favorites, I would imagine.
Absolutely. He said he's had his eye on Dallas for quite some time, Steve, that he'd like to be a part of this.
And I think he's going to be one of the early favorites for the NBA Sixth Man Award. He's your first guy. He's going to be their first option off the bench, and I think he's going to be an integral part of that team.
Okay, Steve Bordstein, some good stuff. Thanks so much for dropping by. We'll catch up with you again real soon. You continue to be on your best behavior, okay?
I will do my best. Thanks.
Hey, Jason Peter joining us here in just a moment. We are going to recap that loss on the road against UCLA last week with his Nebraska Cornhuskers. We'll be right back.
The work of FCA can be summed up in four words: coaches, campus, camp, and community. The four C's are vital in fulfilling FCA's vision of seeing the world impacted for Jesus Christ through the influence of athletes and coaches.
Experience championship golf, great food, and more at Glen Eagles Country Club in Plano while helping raise money for charity. Join me, Basketball Hall of Famer Nancy Lieberman, Monday, October 8th for the first annual Nancy Lieberman Celebrity Classic, benefiting the Nancy Lieberman and Jim Utley Foundations. Help children change their lives. For more information on how to register, visit nancylieberman.com.
Hi, folks. Elissa Walker-Campbell here to tell you about our good friends at Mercer Well Service, who pride themselves on integrity, leadership, and complete customer satisfaction in the oil and gas industry. They truly understand what it takes to be successful. In fact, they've been providing outstanding completion and workover rig services for over 50 years. One of the key components and reasons that they have been able to have such longevity is their exceptional staff and experienced personnel to assist you 24 hours, 7 days a week. Mercer Well Service also provides a full line of completion and workover rig services that include 158 rigs and have 25 swab units. Did you know that Mercer Well Service yard locations include Cleburne, Jacksboro, Kilgore, Whitesboro, and Sweetwater, Texas, among many others? And they are equipped with mud pumps, mud tanks, hydraulic catwalks, pipe racks, and rig supervisors. Why not give them a call today at 940-668-5147. Mercer Well Service. Call them at 940-668-5147.
The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
We are so glad you're with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell, and we always save the very best for last. That's because it is time for our Under the Helmet segment with Jason Peter. And Jason, here in the first segment, actually the first two, we talked about the Pac-12, we talked about the Big 12 Conference, and now we're going to focus on the Big 10. And I know that your Nebraska Cornhuskers are certainly looking to get back on track after a very disappointing loss against UCLA on the road. We were just talking about that with my earlier guest, Steve Bordstein. So first of all, happy birthday to you, Jason. I hope you're having a wonderful weekend with the family. And I can only wonder what the callers were, and when they were calling into your Sports Talk radio show, what they were saying to you on the phone lines.
Yeah, the best part of the show on my birthday was my kids singing happy birthday. When you compare that to the venom and the frustration and everything else that's coming out in callers' voices after the Nebraska game, it was nice to hear the kids singing. But yeah, I mean, but the game, it was embarrassing. As a former player, as a fan, as somebody who covers this team, defensively, it was just, and as a former black shirt, it was embarrassing to watch that game. You know, Jim Moore has done a good job. I mean, I don't want to say he's done a tremendous job at this point, because we'll kind of see how the rest of his year plays out. But for him to win this game, I think, and just it was his second game with new players and installing a new offense and running a new defense, and certainly when you talk about those California teams and the Los Angeles teams, nobody's getting the Trojans confused with the Bruins, but they just they deserve to win that game, and Nebraska's defense gave up 630 some yards or something, the second most in the history of Nebraska football.
Wow.
And it was just, you know, you look at them and you wonder, well, where are they going to get better? How are they going to get better? You know, tackling's horrible, the fundamentals are horrible, and you know, I didn't think that after the second week of the season, to talk about positives, you know, the one positive, or a few of positives, you know, Taylor Martinez has actually been fairly solid. He made some dumb decisions over the course of the game that ultimately didn't cost us. You know, just with he took a safety and he tried to throw the ball out of the end zone, and you know, fortunately they called him down and the ball rolled out anyway. But you know, there was another one where he kind of tried to do this forward shovel pass as he was getting sacked, and it ended up getting intercepted, but they went back and they reviewed it, and his knee was down again. And, you know, he's prone to doing those things. So as a Nebraska fan, you get a little concerned that, gosh, is he going to do it when it's the game's on the line? And because you really just kind of need him to play within the system. But overall, he's actually been playing fairly well. And, you know, the offense has their fair share of critics. You know, on the offensive line, they didn't get the job done in the second half. Play calling was horrible down the stretch in the fourth quarter. You had success running the football pretty much all game long. And when our back was up against the wall, it was still a 27-27 game. Tim Beck decided he wanted to become the New England Patriots, and we just started throwing the ball down after down after down, and no success doing it. So, you know, you combine that with the defense, who, like I said, just played horribly, and the right team won that day, unfortunately.
Jason, do you think that just the Huskers going into UCLA, that they just kind of overlooked them and what they would be capable of doing? Because you guys did start off the season with such an impressive win against Southern Miss. And I know you only lost by 6 against UCLA, but Bo Pelini, I mean, almost sounds like you talking, because he used the word he was embarrassed how you guys had played, and that the inconsistency, the lack of fundamentals, and that you guys are going to have a big turnaround, even though it's Arkansas State.
Yeah, well, I hope he's embarrassed. Because they definitely, in my eyes, overlooked him. I think a lot of people did. I think in year 5, people were expecting more. I think people looked at the schedule and they saw, all right, this is UCLA, Jim Moore, his first year. You know, they're not going to sell out the place. Nebraska fans will probably take over the Rose Bowl. And it was probably 50-50 somewhere around there with fan bases. So it wasn't like Nebraska really had to go on the road and win a game. But, you know, I think people looked at UCLA and said, this will be a win. You know, our bigger games of the year will probably be Wisconsin and Ohio State and Michigan State and, you know, some of the other Big Ten schools, obviously. Wisconsin has had their own fair share of problems. But, you know, preseason, I think that's what people were looking at, that UCLA is just another piece of the puzzle here, but we should be able to go out and we should be able to win this football game. And I think the thing that was discouraging was seeing how much more physical they were. And that's a Pac-12 Pac-12 team, where if there's a knock against the Pac-12, it's that they're not as physical as SEC teams or Big Ten teams, where you know you kind of have to grind it out and pound the football and this and that. And I'll tell you, Jim Moore has pretty much an all-freshman offensive line, whether they're redshirt freshmen or true freshmen. And not only were they knocking guys off the ball and killing anything up front that Nebraska was throwing at them, but you know the little mind games that go on kind of after plays with the little push here, a little shoulder here, and it was the Nebraska players that were on the receiving end of all of that kind of mind battle and the smack talking. They just, it was like they were kind of standing there saying, can I have another one? Yes, sir. May I have another? It just over and over and over and over again. And you just, that's the time when you kind of find out, I think, what type of football team you have and the makeup of the team and the leadership of the team. And they failed in all those departments. It's just people out here are concerned. Bo is saying he's going to fix this defense, but if there are such problems out there, I mean, how are you not aware of those problems going into the season? I mean, because there is a major, major deficiency of talent up front on this defensive line.
Well, now, and you talk about deficiency, the fact that the big news this week that everybody's been talking about is Chase Rome. He leaves the program. You're starting defensive tackle because he wasn't able to achieve his personal goals. We're only in the third week of the season, Jason P.
Well, I think Bo is going to make some changes in this defense, and you'll probably see more of kind of a 30 or a 50 looking front, where you have three down linemen and you bring on a couple extra linebackers and kind of walk them up on the line of scrimmage, so maybe it looks like a five-man front, and you can do some stuff where you have your two inside backers, and then you can kind of drop a safety down as well, and add some run support there, but then you also have some speed on the field where you're able to cover teams that will spread you out and other teams that just get more into passing mode. But losing Chase Rome, he was a starter, and I think going into Monday meetings prior to practice, I think Bo probably laid out who's going to be where on the depth chart in some of these new defenses maybe that Nebraska will show, and he probably wasn't where he thought he should be, and he probably thought he was better than the guy who was in front of him. And it's not just here at Nebraska. It's everywhere. I think kids, they want it right now. They don't want to have to work for anything. I think recruiting does a number to these kids where they're put on such pedestals, and sometimes things are given to them too easy. And when it's given to you, then it doesn't mean as much as when you have to really work for it. And I think it's everywhere. And Chase Rome decided that I guess it wasn't worth the fight. I think a lot of places, a lot of kids, you'd have situations similar, and they would look at it and say, I'm going to go out there today. I'm going to earn my job back. I'm going to go out and I'm going to fight for my job because I know I'm better than that guy. I just don't have to say it. I'm going to show it. And you don't get it. And
But today's kids are completely different as far as their mindset. It's not like the way it was 20 years ago. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, and I think it goes back to the way some people parent, obviously. There's the umbrella or the helicopter style of being a parent, and kind of where you have young kids, whether they're 3-4 years old, and they're at the playground, and maybe a kid pushes your kid or something, because he wants to go on the swing set, and the mother or dad is over there in half a second, making sure nothing happens. I mean, sometimes kids just, they got to figure it out on their own, and you always can't be there for every little thing. They got to learn how to deal with not having success all the time, and you know, you don't have to tell them that they did a great job. I think part of that, when you look at Nebraska's situation with this Chase Rome, is, you know, he didn't play very well in the first two games, and nobody was probably there telling him good job. But I can't imagine that they were telling anybody good job. And, you know, now really wasn't the best time to argue about playing time, especially coming off of the performance out at UCLA. It's just you know, after you have a tackle and maybe a quarterback pressure or something, that's not the time to go into the coach's office and say, I need to be playing more. But, you know, kids are different these days, and that's the part that, I mean, I don't envy any of these coaches having to deal with those types of attitudes.
Those types of attitudes, and also probably those types of parents, too, that come into their offices.
Oh, so. Yeah, I mean, that's something now that these coaches have to deal with is parents calling and saying they want to talk to the coach because they're not happy about their son's playing time. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. And I just, you got to let them kind of learn on their own and deal with success and lack thereof.
Jason Peter with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We're getting ready to close out our interview. We've got about 30 seconds. We always like to take time to recognize our corporate sponsor, Mercer Well Service, that helps bring this very special segment each and every week. We appreciate their support. And, of course, you can check out Jason online at 1620 The Zone. Sharp and Peter does a great job. How many hours is that show? Is it a four-hour show?
We're 4 hours, 7 in the morning to 11.
Wow, are you having a hard time coming up with content, or you got plenty to talk about?
If Nebraska keeps giving up 600-plus yards, it's going to be an easy, short season, I'll tell you that.
Oh, okay, Jason Peter, your golf tournament's only 2 weeks away. We look forward to catching up with you, and we'll talk next week, okay?
Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.